Welcome to the Man Up, Man Down podcast, presented by Volker Baluda and David Pawsey. We discuss the pressures and challenges faced by men approaching middle age that we're often too embarrassed to speak about with our friends. You can find us online at www.manupdown.com. Enjoy the show and don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review.
So, welcome everyone. If I say I couldn't sleep last night because I was full of anticipation for this podcast.
Oh, that's a zinger. Well done, Volker. Good one.
Because we welcome James Wilson today, so also known as the Sleep Geek. So he's a host of a podcast taking the stress out of sleep. He founded this company, KipMate, to help people understand their sleep better and understand which tips and tools to try to get the best kip possible. He works with organizations, sport teams, and individuals delivering seminars, drop-in sessions, and KipMate has sought your kip. It's a digital tool kind of thing, so he tells us all about it. He has worked with the likes of M&S, AB Worked Foods, Ernst & Young, West Ham United, contributing to their triumph in the Europa Conference League last season. So a lot to go there. James is also a poor sleeper, so that's, as he makes it interesting, whose family made beds and mattresses, which I find also interesting. Anyway, and it is a lifelong journey to improve his own and the world's sleep. So James, first of all, welcome to our podcast.
Hello.
So James, I think the reason, and we talked about sleep, you know, and if I say in our pre-talk, I think we talked, if I say forever, about sleep already. So before we went live, I was telling you about it. I used to have data from a sleeping app going back to 2015. So I've tracked my sleep. I look at my sleep. A lot of people now, including myself, have watches, or, you know, I used to have a ring as well to monitor our sleep. So people are more curious about sleep, which means, you know, we want to know what are we actually reading out? Is more deep sleep better? You know, is more REM sleep better? And what we've done, we gave you some of our data over the last 2 weeks, and David and I are, you know, full of anticipation to find out, you know, are we good sleepers? Are we good sleepers?
How well do we perform in bed? Is what Volker's saying.
And it's good job that I'm an expert in helping people perform better in bed. So then we can soon get to the root of the problem.
Which is why the Hammers won their first trophy in goodness knows how long. So anyway, I've got to say congratulations on that, as if you're part of that. So.
I would say, I've worked with lots of different football teams, and I might not be the best sleep expert, but we definitely win things when I work with a football team. So that might say they've got good cultures that embrace the best expertise possible, or it might just say I'm a very lucky mascot. Some clubs are like a goat, some clubs will have like an eagle. Some clubs have a sleep expert who turns up and tells jokes about sleep. So who knows the impact it has. But I think I would like to also say that people often ask me this question, like, you're a bad sleeper, how can you be a sleep expert? I sleep a lot better than I used to. You know, I was a 2-3 hour a night sort of person. I was an academy footballer. And when I was only there about 3 months at Rotherham United, the team I support, and I never slept because I just could not sleep. My teenage years at uni, I was a particularly bad. And like I said, we made mattresses, we sold beds, you know, we were a family that did that. And my moment of my epiphany came when we employed a sleep expert who was a bit of a dipstick, and it wasn't very nice. He told our customers and told me it was my fault, and I thought I could do better than this, because I think good sleep comes from emotional and physical security. We have an underlying genetics. So my genetics are poor. Ironically, comes from my grandpa, who sold the bed company. So, you know, it's if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be here now. And if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be a poor sleeper. And it is. But I do sleep better, but I don't sleep perfectly. And I have 3 kids. We're a blended family. You know, we I have a company that I run. It's not great being a sleep expert. It's not the best job if you're a poor sleeper being a sleep expert, because people's poor sleep reminds me of my own. And I go like, oh, my little voice in my head goes, James, you... That's like you, isn't it? You used to not sleep like that, do you? Oh, do you feel sleep tonight? And I think it's sleep is an interesting one. I think we often put it alongside exercise and nutrition, which is why it sits on the tracker often. But I would say sleep is more like your mental health. It's not something you can control in the way that I think some of the tracking companies want you to believe. And I would say one of the truths about sleep is the harder you try, the harder it gets. So often I'm working with people who shouldn't, who are obsessed, who are, sleep is their number one priority, and that's the worst thing you can be. Because actually, if you are a poor sleeper, one thing you are brilliant at is being tired. And I think changing your mindset is very powerful in this stuff. So yes, as you said, you sent me some data, one from a Garmin watch, one from an Apple. But alongside that data, so if I work with, like, so a lot of footballers will have trackers, and I always get them, when we look at tracking data, I get them to answer three questions alongside that. And this is how I track with people I work with. I don't generally use trackers. I would not say to someone, use a tracker. I work with people who do use trackers, but my preference is to have a more light touch approach, because I think if you're sleeping poorly, me asking you every day what your tracker data is just reminding you of your poor sleep. So I would give that disclaimer with trackers. There are two types of poor sleepers, or there's two types of people who work with me. One is sleep optimizers, people who want to improve their sleep. They might be wanting to exercise in the morning. They might be have a schedule that doesn't work there to suit their sleep patterns, and they might or they might be like a sports person. I just want to get better. I want to get more out of the sleep that I get. Tracking can be probably more helpful for that sort of person. I think if you're poor sleeper like me, tracking just reminds you of something you already know. Wake up in the morning, look at your data, failed again. Well done, James, you're a failure. And I think a lot of people who are poor sleepers think a tracker is an intervention. It's not. It's a measurement tool.
I mean, one of the things that we have sort of mentioned on this podcast before is, you know, like the amount of anxiety that you can get from these, you know, wellness, in inverted commas, devices. And it's that thing of like, you know, you can wake up thinking, oh, I don't feel too bad. Then you look at your watch and like, I only got 5 hours sleep. Oh my God. You know, and then there's other times where it's like, well, I shouldn't be feeling tired because my watch says that I slept really well. And as you say, you know, it's almost anxiety gets tied into that, which obviously anxiety isn't good for sleep.
And they have actually researched this, and they took two groups of people, and they told them, they didn't let them know how long they slept. They told them how well they slept. And the really strong correlation between what you're told in terms of your sleep and your performance the next day. So it's less correlation between knowing how much you've slept and performance, more correlation between what you believe about your sleep and performance. So I think it's, you know, good sleep is a byproduct of physical and emotional security. And I would argue for a lot of people, trackers are designed to create emotional insecurity. Because a part of my work is I work on product development. I've worked with tracking companies, and I have a company where I've been sat on the other side of the table with investors a lot. And investors will ask you, how often, what's your stickiness of your app? Are people coming back to your device every day? And I would say some of the language particularly used by trackers, where what I see is quite good sleep, that's good sleep, they would use words like okay. And that use of language is very interesting, because okay is very different to good. And things like, you perform worse than 75% of people of your age and your gender. But actually, when you look at the actual raw the data, like a friend sent me some, off a Huey, I think it was, where she'd had about 9.5 hours, good quality with them, and the device had gone, that's all right, but other people are doing better. And that's the thing that worries me when and so I think my message with this is with tracking, it's about you, what you're feeling is more important, and let's contextualize it. So with that in mind, let's contextualize this data. I'm going to ask you both some questions you could quickly answer. I'm going to ask you, like, do you think you're good sleepers? Like, what's your view of your sleep? Are you a good sleeper? Are you an okay sleeper? Are you a bit of a rubbish sleeper? So give me an idea of both of you, what you think in answer to that question.
Who wants to go first? Do you want me to go first? Okay. So I generally think I'm a good sleeper. So yeah, should I elaborate on that? I don't know why I think I'm a good sleeper. So I'm,
yeah, can do. Yeah.
So I for instance, as an example, so I'm a light sleeper. So I hear noises. So if the cat comes in at night and it meows, or just even, you know, last night the cat came in and ate a rat. You know, I pick that up. I do. I wake up from it. When I'm in deep sleep, or I assume I'm in deep sleep, and the kids come in, you know, when particularly when the kids are younger and they stand at the end of your bed, I notice it, you know, so I pick that up subconsciously somehow, and I get a total fright and wake up, you know, especially if they go like, oh, daddy, like, you know, I can fall asleep very easily. I don't know if that's good or bad. I guess we find out.
We will find out.
Yeah. So I'm a big nepper. I've always napped a lot. So at uni, I used to work as a warden in halls, which meant I often was called out at 3 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning, 5 times a night, 6 times a night, and some nights not at all, which meant I needed to start to learn how to nap. So I got through uni by literally studying for 90 minutes, sleeping for 20 minutes, so everything got sunk in. Then I had a coffee and repeat that cycle all day. And then I was up, you know, I mean, I worked as a bouncer as well at uni, so I was up until 3-4 o'clock in the morning. But if I say nowadays, you know, and I don't know, I'd say maybe taking some questions away, I'm usually in bed between 9 and 10. I'm asleep by 10 o'clock. I fall asleep like nothing, probably because I'm very tired. I'm up at 5. I have a morning routine. I do a lot of exercise in the morning. And then come 11, 12 o'clock, I get a bit tired. But then if I work from home, I usually have a 20-minute nap, you know, religiously every lunchtime. So I block out an hour for lunch. 20 minutes is my nap. If I'm very busy or if I'm on the road, I try to get 10 minutes in here and there. So like, for instance, on the train in, you know, I just have 10 minutes shut eye. Or, you know, I'm flying to Germany next week, and usually when I go on a plane, I usually have like 10, 15 minutes just before takeoff, and then I'm fit for the flight to just get some work done. So I feel like I'm a good sleeper. I fall asleep easily, and I have my sleep optimized. But curious to hear your opinion.
Let's see. How about you, David?
So I'd say historically, I'd see myself as a bad sleeper. As I mentioned, you know, as a result, I use sort of various sleep aids ranging from, well, I like sleep tea, have a sleep tea in the evening. Generally, I use earplugs because, you know, we live on a main road. And, you know, I use like Nitol and, you know, sort of tablets like that. I've tried CBD oil. So I'd say that, you know, if I'm not doing those things, then I'm a terrible sleeper. I mean, one thing that I would say is, so I generally play football on a Friday night, which is, you know, sort of between 8 and 9. And I, you know, often after that, it'll be like 2-3 in the morning before I can get to sleep. You know, I'm guessing that's like the adrenaline and everything. But I mean, and unlike Volker, I certainly can't fall asleep in a chair. You know, I think I might have slept on a plane once when I was about 14. But yeah, you know, I'm not someone that will fall asleep on public transport. I mean, yeah, like Volker says, sort of any, well, yeah, I, you know, it is almost like I have to sort of completely isolate myself to, you know, complete blackout and, you know, earplugs. So that's me.
So the next question is, what's your sleep type? So sleep type is also known as chronotype. We know it as larks and owls, but when we talk about it, we often talk about two poles. Here's a lark, here's an owl, that's what I am. Well, actually what it is, it's like more like a continuous, more line between the two. We all sit on that line. We do move along that line as we go through life. So in your teenage years, you're more likely to be an owl. As you sort of hit your mid-20s, you kind of get to a point where you've got your sleep type for the rest of your life. At 10 and 55, your sleep type is quite similar. In between that, it does adjust a little bit. So things can sometimes get mixed up with this. So people like do find it harder to sleep as they get older. And that could often be seen as, I'm becoming more of a lark as I get older. Well, no, it's just sleep is more difficult to sustain. We're more sensitive to caffeine as we get older, more sensitive to alcohol. Particularly for women, you know, they will start to live with the menopause. For men, you're often your muscles around your neck start to loosen, and you might be more prone to snoring or to sleep apnea. So one of the myths around sleep is we need less sleep as we get older. You don't. You need the same. It's just harder to get. So ways of working at your sleep type to think about it is think about your genetics. You know, you will have a parent that probably got a similar sleep type to you. Think about how you sleep when you're on holiday, when you haven't got an alarm to wake you up. What time would you naturally wake up? So based on that, are you a lark? Are you an owl? Are you somewhere in the middle?
I mean, for me, I'd say that I'm in the middle. And, you know, and it is interesting you sort of use the holiday analogy or example because, yeah, I guess, you know, I can be on holiday and wake up at 10 in the morning, but I could also be on holiday and, you know, be waking up at 6.
Harder for poor sleepers to work out sleep type because it could be something, you know, it could be there are other things waking you up that aren't necessarily because of your body's natural rhythm, and that can be sometimes quite difficult. And that's where, when I think about it, I think about it as 90-minute windows. So I'm a bit of a early middle. So I will go to sleep somewhere between 9:30 and 11. I'll wake up somewhere between 5:30 and 7. And if I'm hitting about 6.5-7 hours sleep, between good quality in those times, I've met my sleep need. So rather than it being, I've got to go to bed at 10, wake up at 6, that creates stress. It's more of a, like a window of opportunity as opposed to a set in stone time. Because actually, one of the truths about sleep is you can't force yourself to sleep. And that's one of the problems we have. I think poor sleepers often are trying to force it too much.
Hello, it's Volker here. I hope you enjoy this episode. You might not realize that I have been coaching for almost a decade through both third parties and private clients. During that time, I have worked with brands such as General Electric, Imperial Brands, DHL and Pepsi. However, this year I'm putting a big emphasis on growing my private coaching practice, improving lives of middle-aged men in leadership positions. So if you hit midlife transition point and you might be a bit stuck or looking to improve your work-life balance, your career or productivity, you want to build a new habit, or you just want to become a better version of yourself, please hit me up. You can reach me on Volker@Obnatus, that's Volker@obnat.us, or LinkedIn, whatever is easiest. Thanks, and now back to the episode.
Well, I mean, yeah, that sorry, Volker. I messaged Volker like earlier on saying, oh, I'm feeling a bit under the weather today, so I'm probably going to be quiet, you're going to have to do more. But yeah, obviously we're talking about one of my favourite subjects.
So, Bok, if you tell me about your sleep time, how would you see yourself?
So, I would say I'm a lark because that's why I get up at 5, right?
I don't. But is that only up at 5 because you set an alarm to get up at 5? So, does that make you a lark?
I mean, even on holidays, I get up at 5 because I'm so used to it. And sometimes, you know, meditate in bed and then go back to sleep for another hour or two, you know, as a treat, right? So, if I'm on holidays and I'm tired, I wake up at 5. If I'm really stressed, and you might have seen that in the sleep data as well, I wake up at 3, and sometimes I don't go back to sleep, and then I'm awake, and you know it's not unheard of for me that I get up at 3, get a bit of work done until about 9:10 or so, and then go back to sleep, you know, for an hour. So if I say traditionally, I'm trying to think back when I was a child, or even when I was at uni, I didn't mind staying up late. But I think I'm naturally more inclined to get up early.
And I think the thing with sort of larkish behavior, so Lester's a lark, it generally would say about 60% of people are somewhere in the middle, about 30% are owls and about 10% are larks. Society is not kind to owls. So one of the problems we have in society is that, you know, if you're a late type, you're more likely to be called lazy. You're like teenagers are more likely to be late types. We start schools far too early for teenagers. It should start at 10 for me. If we want to solve the epidemic of mental health issues and obesity within our teenagers, let's start school later. Better results. Research shows it, but we won't do it because it creates a bit of social disruption. I think, you know, people in workplaces, if you are having to get up at 6 in the morning to go to work and you're an owl, then that will create some sleep deprivation, and that is often where napping can be helpful, or it can be quite difficult, you know, for people who else. I'm going to send you both a link, and we'll put the link in the show notes as well. There is a thing you could do, which actually is a questionnaire that will give you a bit more of an indicator of what your sleep type is. So I think that'll be interesting for you to do and see what you think your sleep type is, and what this questionnaire tells you. It'll be interesting. And we are developing our own sleep type questions because these are the first questions I ask around people sleep. The last question we'll ask you is what posture do you sleep in? What's your position during the night? Is it front? Is it back? Is it side? Or is it a combination of two or more of those three things?
So for me, it's probably a combination. I always start on my back and fall asleep on my back. But then when I wake up at night, I might be on my side, usually on my right-hand side. Because I was told, and again, this might be an old wives' tale, that if you sleep on your left, because that's where your heart is, there's too much pressure of your organs on your heart, you shouldn't sleep on that. So
there is that research. I've seen it. Again, one of those things that for poor sleepers can cause a lot of anxiety. Yeah, I not something I focus on. I know there's other sports sleep experts who aren't big on that. But
so sometimes I'll kind of cuddle up with my blanket
to
the left, the fetus position. But you know, normally I'm on my back.
Yeah, no, I'd say that I start off on my left side. Well, you know, sort of left side slash on my front. Yeah, again, I like to have a bit of a cuddle with the blanket, which obviously my wife doesn't appreciate because I'm always stealing the duvet.
Well, I'm a big advocate of separate duvets if you have because helps temperature regulation. So you're a hot sleeper. I think particularly for women, it could help temperature regulation. And B, if you live with a duvet hogger, you don't want to be cold in the middle of winter. So separate duvets can be a friend. The idea of separate duvets is I like it. I think it's a good one. Although I don't do it myself because I like to know my wife's there. So although I came for the people, for us, I'm not a massive fan.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's sort of, well, almost leads us on to an interesting topic. I mean, yeah, she now uses another duvet because she got fed up with it. But, I mean, you know, there's sort of a lot of talk about sleeping in separate beds. Well, you know, as you say, temperature regulation and, you know, you basically, especially if you've got two different sleeping types. But then, as you say, you like to know your wife is there. I mean, how often is that sort of a conflict where you've got sort of... We're lucky enough to have a spare bedroom. So if there's nights where I'm sort of tossing and turning, I'll then go into the spare room.
So I would say on that, they call it sleep divorce. I hate that term because it's not a divorce. It can save relationships. I think we often are attracted to the opposite to us in terms of sleep. You'll have an owl and a lark. Makes sense because when you're bringing up kids, I mean, one that's early, one that's late works. And there's some research around... they did some research on a couple of different tribes in South America and Africa where people have been born with sleep types that fitted the group, because actually in that group there was only 20 minutes in the 24-hour period where everyone was asleep because it was part of protection. So it makes sense. And I this is only anecdotal, but I barely meet couples with the same sleep type. It is often opposite. Hot sleeper, cold sleeper, good sleeper, poor sleeper. And that causes issues. And I think it's a compassionate conversation. But again, you get some expertise going, everyone's just sleeping in separate beds because it's better. Because Queen Victoria did, and she lived to this age. So that's the best thing to do. I don't agree with that either. I think it's couples' right and choice to make that decision. But I think don't feel that social pressure that you've got to sleep in a certain way. I think it's what works for you. And I think particularly as we get older, as you said, men are more likely to snore. Women are more likely to snore as well because they also... have the loosening of the muscles around the throat. In 90% of women, we sleep apnea doesn't get picked up. That's really scary because it's a life-limiting condition. And menopause and just more sensitivity, it can be, I think if we don't have a spare room, we've got too many kids. But I think if we did, my wife would at times say, can you go and sleep in there? Because she'd be annoying. Because I am...
annoying.
Yeah, I am the annoying one. So I think it's interesting. But the reason I ask about posture is because a lot of people sleep on their front. And if you sleep on your front, you sleep with your hands above your head, your neck to one side, and that's creating loads of pressure. And a lot of people are waking up in the night. What's triggering their awakening is just being in that position, caught pain. It can be just you can't move properly. So I think it's a question I ask because sleep posture is really important to sleeping well, and it's an easy fix. So if you sleep on your front, you weren't sleeping on your side, buy a body pillow, like a maternity pillow, or buy a knee pillow that you put between your knees, just hug another cushion, and you start to learn to sleep on your side more. So it's maybe you need the right pillow between here and here. A pillow's job is to fill the gap between your neck and the mattress. So it's not what's the one pillow for everyone, it's what's the pillow that'll keep your head in a really straight position. That's what we're looking for. It's back or side, that's what we're looking for. And I think... it's a really easy win when it comes to sleeping well. That we'll go off and we'll take CBD, we'll buy a meditation app. People, when you talk, like, the problem is they've got a sore shoulder, and that's because they've got a pillow and a mattress that's not supporting them properly, and they've spent fortunes on loads of different things that aren't the right solution. So what at Kitmate we do, and what we talk about, I'm taking the stress out of sleep on the podcast, is like, where do we start with you? What's the thing that's stopping you sleeping? Not jump in the middle and buy something, which is what we often do as poor sleepers. And sleep optimizers. Like, I want to optimize my sleep, so I'm going to go. The first thing I'm going to do is go out and spend a lot of money on a tracker. You could just start with the three questions that I ask everybody, which we asked you, which are: how quickly did you fall asleep? Less than 5 minutes, between 5 and 30, or more than 30 minutes. Now, Volk, you've told us about this, and this is really interesting. I have this a lot. I am a good sleeper because I fall asleep quickly. Falling asleep in less than 5 minutes is a sign of sleep deprivation, the biggest indicator of you've not met your sleep need in the days before. And that's
very possible.
So that's, and that is the thing that we ask. So when people say, "Oh, James, I fall asleep fine, so I'm a good sleeper," that's not true, because that's a real, the main indicator I use for sleep deprivation. More than 30 minutes on a regular basis is a sign of insomnia. So it might be you're going to bed too early for your sleep type. It might be you're going to bed a bit early for you, so it's taking you longer to get sleep you need to. Might be you're not winding down properly before bed. You know, you're watching a horror film or you're watching a crime drama rather than watching something like Married at First Sight, which trash TV is the greatest thing ever for good sleep. Comedy's good, repetitive. The TV channels put the stuff that's good in terms of repetitive on at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So, you know, four in a bed, you know what's going to happen. People with B&Bs are going to start fight. Place in the sun, you know what's going to happen. People are going to go and buy a £150,000 flat in some Spanish resort. It happens every day on Place in the Sun. So I think it's important to like get that wind down right, get the bedtime right, so you're not going to sleep too late. The next question I ask is how many times you remember waking up in the night? Because we all wake up 3 to 6 times a night. Every single night you wake up 3 to 6 times. We come out of our sleep cycle. It's part of the evolution that protected us from predators. We come out of our sleep cycle. We're listening out for saber-toothed tigers. What's that? Our hearing comes on 11 minutes before the rest of our senses, switches off 11 minutes after. You need to be awake for 5 minutes to remember being awake. So if you just wake up, check, fall back to sleep, you're fine. You wake up and then you start thinking about work, kids, relationships, embarrassing thing you did 5 years ago in a pub. That's when your brain starts to whir. So there's also a trigger for waking. Partner snoring, person shutting the doors, kids looming at the end of your bed. There's a trigger, pet coming in, punching you in the face. All these things are triggers, but actually then if your brain kicks in, it's harder to get back to sleep. Your brain starts wondering, I wonder if I've done that thing at work. I wonder if I should have handled that argument 5 years ago better. I've just thought of a really zinger of a line. I'll think about that at 2 o'clock in the morning. That's what a lot of poor sleepers, you're solving problems. Where good sleepers still wake up, they fall back to sleep because they're good sleepers. So I think if you don't remember waking at all, brilliant. That I love it when I can't remember. That's for me. Doesn't matter how much sleep I've had. That says to me that the sleep I got was really good quality. Remember waking up one or two times? Fine. You know that's fine. That's not a massive concern. Three or more than it is. And I think you know, so I'd say on both your data, you were pretty good on that one, on sleep quality. Obviously, Volcon was fourthly less than 5 minutes. The thing is, David, I actually look at your data generally.
Yeah.
You look like a good sleeper from that data I've got, because you were falling asleep in about 5 to 30 minutes. You were waking up maybe once or twice in the night. Had a couple of occasions where it was more than three. But you've actually said to me in conversation, it only takes you 2 hours to get to sleep. So that could be an anomaly over the last couple of weeks. Because like 2 hours getting to sleep, I would say, and you actually said to me, I think, I can't remember if it was off the podcast or with it, you went to bed a bit later sometime this week and you fell asleep quicker. Well, that's actually often a good place to start to improve your sleep. If you're falling asleep at 12, but you're going to bed at 10, well, let's wind down for the hour before 12, create a healthy routine, a really strong routine, and then let's start to move that earlier a little bit. Because I've talked about that 90-minute window. Your 90-minute window might be half 10 till 12. We could get you to half 10. But if that's when you're falling asleep now, that's where I start. You fall asleep at 12. Hour before 12, we'll start winding you down. The last question we ask is, how do you feel at 10, 11 in the morning? Because at 10, 11 in the morning, you should feel it alert and active. Because that's the time in your body's natural rhythm where you're most alert. At 2... So I think David, you said you felt a bit lethargic around 2. That's perfectly normal. Between 1 and 3, we're more likely to be lethargic. Between 5 and 7, we have a little bit of a dip as well, and we can feel a bit lethargic. Now, Volker, you said, I often feel tired at 10, 11 in the morning, but I'm exercising in the morning and the tiredness comes from that. So again, that's contextualizing the data. And in some ways, if I was working with you one-on-one, I'd discount that a little bit, because we know where that tiredness is not necessarily from sleep deprivation, or maybe it is based on some of the other indicators we're getting. So if anyone wants to track their sleep lightly, if I'm working with someone, I'll give them a little diary and we use smiley faces, a smiley face, an all right face and a sad face, and we answer these questions. And for me, it's if you're having three in a row of one of those being sad, being sort of, you know, something that's a worry. So whether it's falling asleep taking you quite a long time, or falling asleep quickly, whether it's waking up more than three times in the night, or whether it's I feel tired every day at 10, 11 in the morning, if we're having that for a couple of days, that's when, if I'm working with people one-on-one, that's when I'm like, right, we need to address this. So with the sports people I've worked with, that this is how I try and get them to contextualize the data on the top. So I've had sports people tracking their sleep, come through with data, really worried, maybe telling them they're getting 5% REM sleep, 10% deep sleep. Often it's because they're using a Whoop, you know, because you might as well use a chocolate fire guard, in my opinion, than that product. When we get them to think about themselves and how they feel and what's happening going to bed in the night, actually the data is often not as bad as the data off the tracker. And then they go forward, still use a tracker, but they're contextualizing it better with how they feel. And that's how we often want people to look at. Now, when we look at your data you sent across, again, it looked all right. Now, the Garmin's less usable, I think, in terms of the interface. It's talking a lot about heart rate. Heart rate is good to measure deep sleep. And I think all trackers struggle to measure REM sleep. So again, mm-hmm. if people are looking at their tracker data, bear in mind that if you're measuring REM sleep in a clinic, you've actually got some sensors here, because rapid eye movement sleep is picking up your eye movement, move. Your watch or ring tracker can't do that. So I would use the analogy again of the chocolate teapot and say, you know, and sometimes some of them can really struggle to get anywhere near what your REM sleep would be. So I always take that data with a little bit more pinch of salt. And I think the thing about deep sleep and REM sleep is I get asked a lot, from journalists, what can we do to improve deep sleep? What can we do to improve REM sleep? It doesn't really work like that. If you improve your wind down routine, those stages of sleep will be improved. If you improve your sleep schedule to meet your body's natural rhythm, both those stages will improve. It's hard to pull out them individually to improve. Now, things can impact them more so, those two stages. So, for example, if you were using sleeping pills or you're using alcohol to get to sleep, that's more likely to impact REM sleep, stage of sleep. So REM sleep, the reason that REM sleep is important is that's where we emotionally recover. That's where our body goes through an overnight counseling session. So that's where REM sleep is important. Deep sleep is more about physical recovery. It's where growth hormones produced. And the bit in the middle, what some trackers call core sleep, what might be called stage one and stage two sleep, we don't know. That's connecting sleep. And that makes up about 60% of our sleep. Deep sleep, roughly, we'd want about 20%. REM sleep, roughly, we'd want 20%. But it's an individual to you. So some people do just naturally need a bit more REM sleep. Some people naturally might need a bit more deep sleep, might need a bit less. I think with trackers, the thing I try and get people to look at is trends, not night by night data. What's your sort of 3 week data looking like, rather than, and compared it to the previous 3 weeks, rather than what's tonight? Because tonight is the problem. When we go, oh God, I failed, it all levels. And I think, again, if we're losing data like that, it's interesting that, David, your data looked okay to me. Couple of instances of nights that were a bit poorer, but that could just be inaccuracy. It might not be you.
Man Up, Man Down is sponsored by Well Doing. As someone who has seen a counsellor for a number of years, I think their approach is great. They want you to find the mental health professional who is right for you. You can filter your search to highlight therapists with expertise where you need it, or you can pay to use their personalised matching service. The people who run Well Doing are experts in mental well-being, and they also have loads of posts and interviews to keep your mental health in good shape. Take a look at welldoing.org.
I mean, well, there's a couple of things that, well, A, I've found incredibly liberating, and that's that 90-minute window, because I guess I've become obsessed with the fact that I've got to be in bed at a certain time, and I've got to be asleep by a certain time. So yeah, you know, it's like, oh, well, actually, you know, and the fact, I mean, I'm almost sort of thinking I might just start taking my watch off at night and, you know, and not recording the data. And as you say, sort of just go on how I feel.
And as someone who sort of self identifies as a poor sleeper, that would be my advice. That would be my advice, because I think I've used trackers in the past to test them. I think, as I said, I've been involved in developing trackers. And when I do, I do sleep worse, because sleep becomes too important then.
Yeah. Well, it's a metric that you've got to achieve, isn't it? But yeah, I mean, like, the other things that I just wanted to ask, I mean, you sort of spoke about sort of like, you know, evening routine. I mean, from my sort of experience slash perspective, for me, best night's sleep will be some exercise sort of by lunchtime, you know, early afternoon, getting out in the daylight as much as possible. So, you know, walking the dog a couple of times and well, yeah, just sort of, you know, I guess a bit of movement, a bit of sunlight. So, I mean, I guess what my question is, and you sort of talked about TV because, you know, I love TV. I watch a lot of TV and, you know, and I often think, oh, well, I should be turning the TV off at 9, having a read, and then, you know, I'll be asleep by 10. So, you know, what, well, A, I mean, I was like, oh, it's quite nice to know that actually I can watch TV before bed. But, I mean, I guess my question is, you know, we hear a lot about, like, blue screen time. And, I mean, like, one of the things I heard from another sleep expert was that, you know, it's sort of that hour of screen time before you go to bed is completely irrelevant because it is, you know, sort of how much sunlight. So is there a perfect routine or is it entirely down to the individual?
So perfectionism is the enemy of sleep. So there's not a perfect routine. There's a routine that's right for you.
Right.
And
yeah,
that routine might be different to me. So a lot of advice on this is based on data set of one, and is the person might in the advice and what they like to do. So I would say the blue light, the other expert's right. Blue light research, we did think it was interrupting the circadian rhythm. There's lots and lots of people selling glasses to help you. It's a placebo. The blue light off your phone, you hold your phone at 4 centimeters, gives off 40 looks. So I use natural light boxes for shift workers or like sports people have to get up early. Like if I'm working with teenagers who are divers or swimmers, they give off about 10,000 looks at 50 centimeters. Your phone gives off 40 looks at 40 centimeters. The light box is there to mimic the sun. Your phone is not the sun. So as long as, like you say, so if you're getting natural daylight in the day, early in the day, less likely to have any impact, but it doesn't really have any impact. The issue with devices is more the choices we make about what we're doing on them. If we're looking at work emails in the hour before bed, then that's going to be a problem. If we are on social media looking at what someone from school's been up to and you hated them at school, that's creating anger. That is not going to help you fall asleep. If you are like if you are a football fan and you're watching your team before bed, the adrenaline and the thought processes will not be conducive to sleep. So it's about the choices now. So if you're watching content, comedy, repetitiveness, trash TV is brilliant. Drama, the news, question time is not. It's sort of that simple. But the routine has to be the right time for your body's natural rhythm. That's easier. And it has to be, you know, and one thing I would say is get dressed as you start your routine. Because sleep is a feeling, not a time. So if you feel sleepy as you're winding down, go to bed. One of the biggest mistakes a lot of us make is we'll be on the sofa and we'll think, I'll go to bed. And then we'll start doing stuff. We will go and let the pets out. We will go and make sure the dishwasher's being packed. We'll look at if the clothes are clean for the kids. We'll go upstairs, we'll brush his teeth. We'll go in the bedroom, we'll get dressed for bed. We'll get into bed. Turn off the light. We're like, we can't get to sleep. I feel awake now. And your body's screaming at you going, you were sleepy 20 minutes ago. And now you started doing wake-up stuff. I gave you cortisol. I gave you adrenaline. And now you want to go to sleep? Make your mind up, cocker, because I do not know what you are doing. And this is what we do to our body. So if I listen to your body will tell you when you're sleeping and go to sleep. So I think that's one. I think probably Volker, you probably experience that. You have consistency because you've quite a consistent wake-up time. So consistent wake-up time drives consistent sleep time because it drives a sleep appetite. It drives that sleep drive, that sleep pressure builds up during the day. And, you know, as you get towards bedtime and you have a routine. Now, even if you have a consistent, so for someone like you, Volker, I would say, you have a bit of sleep deprivation, I would say. And I would say that means going to sleep is easy, but you still should be winding down because if you fall asleep at 10 every night, but you spent an hour beforehand winding down properly, your quality of sleep will be better. You're less likely to wake up at 9 in the morning. So if you've got a decision to make, I've worked late, say you've worked till 9:30, but I want to be in bed for 10, you are better off giving yourself an extra 30 minutes, extra 45 minutes of wind down. Because then your quality will be better, and that extra 45 that lack of 45 minutes of less sleep might mean you don't wake up at 3 a.m. and will mean that you get better quality sleep. So sometimes less is more in terms of duration to improve quality. And that's what we just talked about with David. That's the rigidity that we don't want to have.
That's interesting. I mean, there are a few points. So one thing is for me as well, if I want to relax, you know, and if I say, if I let myself relax, I can sit in front of the TV, I don't know, let's say 6-7 o'clock at night, watching TV. And I'm not someone, I don't tend to work late, right? I'm not working up to bedtime and then go to sleep. But if I'm sitting in front of the TV at 7 o'clock, I sometimes just fall asleep and my watch thinks, oh, Falk is asleep. And then he's awake again between 9 and 10 because, you know, I'm waking up, going upstairs. But then at 10 o'clock, I'm gone again, right? So if I say you're probably right, I mean, obviously you're the expert, so you are right. That there's sleep deprivation somewhere.
I think to me, your story is about sleep deprivation. And another thing that was interesting, your data is so you're having less deep sleep than probably I would like you to. I think particularly if you do a lot of exercise, because deep sleep is where you physically recover, and often napping gives you that energy boost. But there is some research that napping can affect sleep at night and particularly deep sleep. So although you're sleep deprived, it could be the nap could be affecting the deep sleep, or really the sleep deprivation's affecting it because you're just sort of like you're zonking. You're not wind, like you say, you don't need to wind down. So at 7, you're like already going. You're trying to stay awake. That the hormones to stay awake are like adrenaline and cortisol. They're in your system. You're going to sleep, and they're there a little bit. And the there is you go to sleep, so the deep sleep is less likely to come. Or the other thing is the tracker's inaccurate, and you're having all right deep sleep. Because we did look, didn't we? We looked historically, and actually historically, your deep sleep is okay and is better than what we were seeing. So we were seeing an average maybe of like, so 1 week you had 11%, 1 week you had 10%, and then the other week you had 3%. You're probably looking at your data more historically, it's probably between 10 and 15. And one thing we did see in your data, you had more REM sleep. So you had like about 30% REM sleep in the 3 week period. But looking historically, it was more around 20. So one thing about more REM sleep doesn't necessarily mean it's better. As we talked about, REM sleep is a stage of sleep where you have an overnight counseling session. If you have more REM sleep and it's not your normal trend, that might indicate there's some sort of emotional issues. There might be a bit of stress.
Yeah, very, very likely.
And it's not saying you've got to do something about it, but I think contextualizing that REM sleep increase, you know where it's coming from. And if you're, you know, and you maybe then you're having less deep sleep and more REM sleep, I'm feeling wind down might be an issue here. Yeah. And that might be something to look at.
If I'm sleep deprived, can you catch up with that? So does it work for me or for anyone who's sleep deprived, right? To say, okay, it's a weekend, I've got to have a lie-in until 7. So 7 for me is a lie-in, right? You know, for others would go like, what, 7? You know, is it possible to catch up with sleep? Because there are different theories out there.
Yeah, yes, but not how you think. You don't have a sleep debt where you can catch up with the weekend. So it's not a bank. You can go and play, you can pay that debt off. But if you've not met your sleep needs in either quality or quantity, your body will try and give you better sleep the next night. The best thing for good night's sleep tonight is actually a bad night's sleep last night. Because your body, sleep's an instinct. You need sleep. You will die without sleep. You need food, water, air, and sleep to live. So your body will try and give you better sleep, better quality sleep, and a bit more sleep. But what your body also likes is consistency. The one thing that is good about your sleep, Volker, is the consistency, because your body, it drives that sleep pressure nicely. But also, if you have 6 hours in the week, 7 hours in the week, and then you have 10 at the weekend, your brain and body has lots of things to do during sleep. And if you do with it in the week, do have about 6 hours to swim in, 7 hours to swim in, you've done them. You add another 2 or 3 hours on at the end. It's junk sleep. It's poor quality sleep. But what it is doing is putting your major organs into shutdown mode for longer. And that can cause some... There was a piece of research that looked at two groups of people. One group had 6 weeks... Sorry, had 5 hours for 6 weeks. The other group had 5 in the week and 10 at the weekend. The 5 and 10 group, significantly more sleep, they saw like a decrease in efficiency of their liver and kidney function. And the hypothesis is that they were in shutdown mode for too long. So at the weekend, if people do that, have that lie-in, they will often feel more lethargic at the weekend because their body's been in shutdown mode for longer. Now, if you sleep well and you have a lie-in, that's not a problem. And my wife says I have to put this in to my talks because she's a good sleeper, brilliant. And as all poor sleepers, I was attracted to her because of her good sleep genes. And she lies in at the weekend. She has a cup of tea before bed. She does lots of things wrong, but sleeps fine. And therefore, she's not my problem. And lying's all right, more than an hour and a half, 2 hours, you're going to start having a problem. It'll affect your body's ability to get the most out of its sleep. So I would say, yes, you can catch up on it, but you won't be aware of it, probably. Your body will be trying its best, but you need to switch your brain off. So the night after, so if I've been away and had a poor night's sleep, the night after, I will be more focused on my wind down to ensure that the sleep I get is as good quality as possible. Might be an hour more, but it's that quality I'm looking for to in inverted commas, catch up. No, it's these sorts of things that we always try to dispel and help people understand. And that's my work, whether it's on the podcast or whether it's with KitMate. This is the stuff. Like, if we can get better understanding around this stuff, people can get more out of the sleep they're getting.
So whilst we're on that topic, what is, and I think I know the answer, but what is the ideal amount of sleep? I mean, I on average get about, I don't know, six hours, 40s. 7 hours, right? So over the year, probably with holidays, I probably get 7 hours, right?
Yeah.
Is 7 hours enough, or does it really depend by person? Because I think
depends by person, like, yeah.
Sleep was a nation, right?
Yeah.
She has a hard time falling asleep. Once she's awake, she can't go back to sleep. But she sleeps for the nation, right? So you know, I mean, kids are teenagers, so it's different. But...
Yeah. So it's all individual. I think if you get in less than six hours. You're probably going to struggle to meet your sleep need. If you're getting more than 9 or 10 and you're not an elite athlete, there's maybe an underlying health issue there because you can have too much sleep. But then I think this is why I always focus on how you feel rather than number, because it's have I met my sleep need? The answer is in those three questions. How big did you fall asleep? How many times do you wake up at night? How do you feel at 10 in the morning? If that's how you answer it. And I think that is, there's not a magic number. And I think, one of the biggest drivers of my work is the idea that if you have less than 7 hours sleep, you're going to die. There's a book called Why We Sleep by Matthew Walker. I think we discussed it in our pre-tour, didn't we, Volker? And that book tells you these things. The data shows it, but that data is not you. That data is based on a general population data. And it's dying earlier is not necessarily... There's so many factors that can go into you dying earlier to try and say sleep is the one. It's like with breastfeeding with babies. Some people try and look at some research and go, breastfeeding means your kid will be cleverer at 15 and will sleep better and things like that. We can't take that little piece of input and claim all the benefits that we've maybe seen in the data. So I think sleep need is individual. So like I say, I don't even have a number. I have like 6.5 to probably 7.5 hours consistent, going to be at the right time for me, waking up at the right time for me, within my window's opportunity. That what I used to have is, I need 8 hours sleep. I need it. And if I don't get it, I'm going to be awful. Why I sleep better now? I sleep better at 43 than I did at 20s, in my 20s. You're supposed to sleep worse in middle age. The research shows it. But I've understood myself so well now that poor night's sleep doesn't affect me, my relationship with my sleep going forward. And that's what we're trying to achieve. One night of bad sleep shouldn't affect your relationship with sleep going forward. That's what we want. And if you know how much sleep you need and you're getting close to it, have a window. So I'd say for you, Volker, please, I'd like you to maybe get a little bit more. And you're quite similar to a lot of the CEOs and people who run companies I work with. They will say, James, exercise is a non-negotiable. I've got to exercise often in the morning.
Yeah.
And I'll make the point that you could live for 10, if you could exercise for 10 days, you'd be fine. If you didn't sleep for 10 days, you'd die. I'm no one's mum. I'm not here to tell you what to do, but understand where sleep fits into your well-being. Food, water, air, and sleep. Exercise is not in that. You won't die if you don't exercise.
Oh, I mean, there's quite a few things I wanted to come back to, but I mean, for me, you know, if I go more than a few days without exercise, it destroys my mental health. I don't sleep as well. You know, so
those things are true. Definitely, the research is unequivocal. Exercise improves sleep. You couldn't. There's no research say it doesn't. Too close to bedtime. Like I think you both talked about exercise in the right frame that it needs to be earlier in the day, and that can be up to maybe 5, 7 o'clock depending on your sleep type. If you're a lark, exercising earlier is better. Owl, maybe a bit later is better because your body's more in ready for it. So I'm not saying it's not important. I'm just saying if you are if you're making a choice of I will have less sleep to exercise on a regular basis, you've got to accept that you're maybe going to have that little bit of sleep deprivation, and that's where I'm not anyone's mum. I challenge with a smile on my face, but you are entitled to make your own decisions. That is my view on it.
I just had a question around, you were sort of saying about, you know, the point of REM sleep is to, well, a counselling session, as you described it. Are there any studies sort of correlating between people that are perhaps more naturally stressed and their REM sleep? And also, I mean, is there a way to sort of trigger REM sleep? So then, which is then shown to, you know, reduce, well, people that suffer from severe anxiety and stuff.
So with REM sleep, if we're trying to improve that, it's taking away the things that make it worse. So it would be, alcohol affects REM sleep significantly. Sleeping pills affect REM sleep significantly. Not meeting your sleep need in terms of duration and quality affects it. So if you don't sleep well, often the bit of sleep you miss is REM sleep. Because you're sleeping short, or you're not giving you, so deep sleep's early in the night, REM sleep's late in the night. Deep sleep is harder to wake you up from. REM sleep's quite easy to wake you up from. Deep sleep, you still dream, but you don't remember it. REM sleep, you can still more or less remember your dreams. You basically, the people who remember dreams is because they wake up close to the dream. Might be scary, might be sexy. They're the dreams we remember. Deep sleep, so there's a condition called parasomnia, like sleepwalking, sleep talking. Sleep eating, sleep driving, with footballers who hit the ball in the sleep, sexomnia, where people carry out sex acts in the sleep. And they can kind of occur in both stages, but in deep sleep, you don't know you're doing it. So if you've ever had that thing when they were younger, they had night terrors, and they sprang up, screaming, looking straight through you, and in the morning you say, what were you doing last night? I'm like, what are you on about? I was doing nothing. Where REM sleep, you generally are aware of, you're acting out a dream, or you're acting out. And REM sleep, it happens because during REM sleep, we're paralyzed to stop us acting out dreams. But some people, they're still asleep. One part of the brain's still asleep, but the bit the paralysis switches off, that's sleepwalking, sleep talking, sleep eating, sleep footballing. The opposite of that is sleep paralysis, where you can't move, but you're awake. And often you'll then hallucinate something for your brain to work out, why can't I move? So it could be like a figure looming over you. I believe most ghostly sightings are REM sleep disorders, where your body's trying to work out,
wow,
what's happening here. So REM sleep is more about taking away the things that that make it worse. With REM sleep and stressed anxiety, yeah, there's correlations between lack of REM sleep makes you more stressed and anxious. There's correlations that people who are stressed and anxious are more likely to suffer from REM sleep disorders. There was some piece of research around organisations where what you found is people actually were more likely to lose a temper at work if they're not slept well. And that's about REM sleep. And we know it. You know it. If you've not slept well, you're thinking someone could have.
Same with my wife. My wife certainly knows when I've not slept well.
And me and my wife worked together. We met working together. And I was she's a product, head of product. And I was a product that she was working on. And people used to say to her, Is James slept well last night? Because what they're asking is, can we go and tell him this bad news, or is he going to start swearing at us? And I'm a lot better now with that, but I didn't really recognise that lack of emotional regulation was really strongly connected to my sleep, and it comes from the lack of REM sleep.
I mean, we're getting very close to the end. I just had one more question. I mean, it's just around caffeine. Like, I guess I kind of know the answer again, but it's an individual thing. But it, you know, for me, well, you know, like I sort of said, I'm just going to have a quick coffee before we got going. But, you know, I certainly wouldn't drink a coffee. You know, 12 o'clock is like my cutoff. And that's pushing it. You know, like I try and not have any caffeine after 11 in the morning. I mean, and again, I thought it was like an old people's thing, because like my stepdad will have a coffee literally before he goes to bed, and like my in-laws will have a cup of tea. But then there's someone that I work with, and he's the same. He's like, yeah, I can have a coffee and then go to bed.
So we all metabolize coffee at different rate, caffeine at different rates. There is actually, you can get a test for it and you can see what your metabolic rate of caffeine is. And it is that. So one of the players, footballers I've worked with was Italian. He'd have an espresso before bed. People get really really concerned about that in the club, but he was sleeping all right. And that espresso did for him, it was a reminder of home. It was like a little cuddle. Wife has said drinks a cup of tea before bed. She's from Barnes. That's what we do in South Yorkshire. We cup of tea is very connected to our culture. She does. Yeah. She used to have it as when she was little, and she sleeps well. So I've not got really a problem with it. And I think it's that. But again, you know, if you want a coffee late and you know it'll affect your sleep, that's a decision you can make. You're an adult. If you like, sometimes I'll have a Coca-Cola at 7 in the evening. I know I'll be up at 3, by the way, because caffeine doesn't just stop you going to sleep. If you're struggling to stay asleep, caffeine can be an issue. I'll have a glass of Coke. I'm a bit of rock and roll, you know. Let's have a some caffeine late. But sometimes I want to. So it is those decisions. So caffeine, we get more sensitive as we get older. We have a different metabolic rate. Work out your metabolic rate. But I'll say this: I've never met anyone who suffers from insomnia who's cured their insomnia by cutting out caffeine. It isn't. It's not helpful, but it's not the golden bullet. It's not the one thing. Because there is no one thing for most people. It's a collection of little things that you've got to try and work out what they are.
Now, caffeine, I gave up caffeine 3 years ago now. So I don't take any caffeine. However, I used to be so used to caffeine, I could have an espresso, double espresso, and go to sleep like that. I almost slept better after a cup of coffee because I was so used to caffeine. I mean, that's my theory. And again, you know, correct me. You know, because
crashing it, you're a crash as well. So often if you're napping, having a shot of caffeine as you go to nap works really well because you get that double hit of the nap energy and the caffeine energy. The thing with caffeine is if you're looking at a performance environment, the research, again, is quite clear that after about 8 weeks of taking caffeine, your body becomes quite immune to it in terms of increasing performance. But every single sports club's individual athlete I've worked with will take caffeine as part of their stimulus for a game. And it's a placebo, I'd argue, based on what the research is telling us. But people will still take it. And I have never been successful in getting sports clubs to sort of put back on the caffeine as a stimulant for the game. It's embedded in the culture. It's embedded in our culture. It's a bit like blue screens. It's more sort of blue screens because caffeine stops the body's ability to fall asleep. It blocks the process of falling asleep. But how quickly you metabolize it is different. And for some people, basically, my wife's sleep genes are so strong, she can go over it. Now, on that basis, this will be probably too important to finish on. What we call poor sleep is normal human behavior. What we call poor sleep, you're supposed to not sleep when you're stressed. If you could fall asleep when you were stressed, you'd have got eaten by a saber-toothed tiger. So when I'd argue good sleep is the anomaly, that actually my wife's ancestors were saved by a poor sleeper, probably my ancestors, and they ran up a tree to get away from the saber-toothed tiger. It's we need to stop seeing sleep in that way. That as poor sleepers, we are finely tuned humans who are, but we just need to convince ourselves that we're not stressed. You know, we need to stop worrying in the middle of the night. We need to feel safe and secure physically and emotionally. And if you are a poor sleeper, you are brilliant at being tired generally. So you will have a story of a time you slept really poorly and performed amazingly. With my sports people, we have this. This is one of the most common conversations I have. When they're going, I need sleeping pills the night after a game, and I'm saying you don't. You just need to get the best sleep you can. And they're going, yeah, but I'll be awful tomorrow. I get them to tell me the five times that you've had poor sleep and performed amazingly. And they can do 15, they can do 20. And it's that's the stories we need to tell ourselves. A lot of poor sleep comes from mindset and the stories we've created around our poor sleep. And if we change the story, we'll change the performance of our sleep.
I'm sure there was an incident where an England game got called off like right at the last minute and they'd all taken their caffeine. So then they all had to have sleeping pills. And then when the game was rescheduled for the next day and... Oh yeah, absolute pants because they were all
and sleepy pills are like alcohol. Sleepy pills don't give you recovery sleep; they give you sedation. So you might have seen this stuff around Dele Alli where he was taking sleepy pills, he became addicted to them. The saddest thing about that is that actually sleepy pills weren't even helping him sleep, and sleeping pills particularly affect REM sleep And he was suffering from trauma. And the point of REM sleep is to help work through trauma. So he wasn't getting the REM sleep to work through the trauma. He thought he was getting sleep, but he wasn't. And it's not anyone's fault in football. The doctors are told in their training, sleeping pills help sleep. The doctors have no other tool. In the NHS, the doctors have no other tool to give you, really, apart from sleeping pills or a digital CBTI app. One of the problems we have with sleeping, at the moment, we've just gone through the clocks changing. And sleep experts are obsessed with we should be on standard time. And that is important because it's more in line with our body's circadian rhythm. But there are far bigger issues with the sleep in this country and globally. Teenagers going to school too early. 1.6 million people in the UK have undiagnosed sleep apnea, which is a breathing disorder, which limits your life. And we don't have access to good quality sleep support within our public healthcare systems or even our private healthcare systems here in the UK. They're the issues we need to solve. We should be so uneducated around sleep, but we are because no one's educating us. And if you couldn't breathe, you'd be in hospital like that. If you couldn't absorb nutrition, you'd be in hospital like that. If you can't sleep, it's probably because you're getting older. That's what you get from medical professionals, and that's what needs to change. But we also have some part in this. We need to understand ourselves better, and we need to take responsibility for the things that we are doing that maybe have impacted our sleep. And if we are doing those things, and we're not sleeping well, then we can't really complain.
So I have two more questions as well before we wrap up. Yes. So one question, it's maybe a short one, but I was told horsehair mattresses are the best mattresses ever. From memory, are they £10,000 each or something like that? Is that true?
So I'm laughing. Mattresses are like anything else to sleep. What's right for you? Now, mattresses fall into two categories, technical and luxury. Horsehair is luxury. I'd say luxury is more like is more about a flex than it is a help. A gold-plated spring is not going to help your sleep in any way. But you can tell your mates about it. You need a mattress that's right for you. Now, bear in mind with mattresses, you've got two people sleeping on them. One person, like, I'm blobby. Men are generally blobby with blobs. We ain't got much shape to our body. We're big, blobby blobsons. Women have got more shape to the body. They've got curves, and they've got, like, curves in their spine and things. So I've got broad shoulders and no real curve to my spine. My wife's got narrow shoulders and a curve to her spine. I need firmness here. So I need softness here and firmness here. She needs firmness here and softness in her hips. You buy one mattress, that often doesn't give you that. So it's interesting. I am at the moment, we're creating some products for KitMate. And what the problem we're trying to solve is that problem. One mattress that supports two people. We have found a solution, but it's a mattress that is right for you. And it's not about how much, it's about is it right for you. So no, horsehair is no better than wool. Wool from Kashmir that has been on the Outer Hebrides, and there's three of them, and someone's had to arm wrestle the animal into shaming it. It doesn't make any difference to your sleep.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because, I mean, German efficiency, my parents have a bed, a double bed, but they have individual mattresses, individual duvets, so they can, you know, Germans are way ahead in that game.
Yeah, Europe is far better. And the solution I found to the problem that I've just described comes from Germany in terms of a spring. And that's because Germany in particular, understand sleep better. If you go to Scandinavia, they understand sleep better because their light levels, one part of the year is light all year round and you can't sleep. Other part is dark all year round and you can't wake up. You've got to get your sleep right in that environment. So there, horsehair, it's about you. And if anyone has a question about products, I'm on social media, at The Sleep Geek, ask me questions because a lot of the stuff around products at the moment, there's a lot of snake oil around products.
And I'm 100% with you. You need a proper pillow. So we invested in neck support pillows.
Yeah.
And perfect. And the last question I have is, where can people find out more about?
So I'll give you my... So as I said, I am The Sleep Geek. I'm on social media as The Sleep Geek. So you just search for at The Sleep Geek on most of your favorite social media channel. You can find out more about my work at thesleepgeek.co.uk, where we have information about the companies I work with, including one of the country's biggest mattress retailers that I'm training their staff to link product to problem to help people make better buying decisions around this stuff. So that's a company called Mattress Online. Kitmate.com, where you can find out about our corporate work with organizations and sports teams, but also access to Sort Your Kit digital tool. And I have a real podcast, favorite podcast app, Apple, Spotify, taking the stress out of sleep. And my whole approach to sleep is that if we take the stress out of sleep, we start to sleep better. You know, I've worked with hundreds of, I would argue I've worked with more poor sleepers than anybody else in this country and maybe the world. And what I've learned over the last sort of 10 years doing this sort of thing, you take the stress out of it, people sleep better. That's it. Find their issue, find the tools and tips that'll solve their issue, people sleep better. I'm not promising perfect, but I can promise better.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. It's about lunchtime, so it's time for my 20-minute nap. So thank you so much for analysing our sleep and hopefully answering lots of questions, you know, from the podcast guests. And
I mean, if we perhaps could do another one and we get our listeners to send in their questions. And sorry, you also said that you're like the sleep expert on Radio 1 as well.
Yeah, so I do life hacks on Radio 1. I'm there sleeping. And I appear from time to time on your TV on BBC Breakfast this morning, it's Despat Lunch. I do things like that, helping people sleep better. I will wish everyone to sleep well. I'll also give you a little disclaimer. For you two, you might sleep worse tonight because you'll be thinking, what did he say? Actually, this pillow's rubbish. So if you're listening to this, 2-3 nights in, you'll sleep better. First night, you'll be thinking, that sleep expert would know nothing. But I do, and it does come eventually.
It's Friday night, the red wine will knock me out, so I have no doubt I've got to get
but sleep. You won't get your REM sleep.
That's
it. Anyway.
Sleep well.
Thanks very much, James.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode. Feel free to reach out to Folker or David via our website, www.manupdown.com or podcast@manupdown.com, with any feedback or to let us know what topics you'd like us to cover in the future. Hear you again soon.